Good evening. At this time, we begin the technical net on Limar. Your net control people are Mel, K2KEY, and Dick, K2RIW. Main purpose of the technical net, if you haven't heard it before, is to answer people's questions about ham radio. There's 26 different kinds of ham radio. FM 2-meter repeater ham radio is just one of those kinds. That's what you're listening to. So before you get discouraged by the one you're using, try one of the 25 others. People usually ask each other questions on things like favorite antennas, favorite transmitters, and how to make a receiver work better, and how closely can you stack the antennas, and what is that transmission line really doing, and how do Smith charts work, things like this. Of objects of interest to ham radio operators, we occasionally get into high-definition television and video cassette recorders, you know, electronics in general, the kinds of wireless or computer-type electronics that of interest to ham radio operators. Those kind of questions are appropriate for the TechNet. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and a yes or a no, meaning you do have a question or a comment for the net if you answer yes. A typical sign-in would sound like this, N2EO, Rich and Yes, which is a frequent sign-in. Do we have any check-ins? Please give me your call letters and name at this time, KQRIW.
W2EWK, Eugene and Patchor. No traffic, but you're doing a good job there, Mr. Dick. Excellent job. I commend you on your job, W2WK Clear.
Eugene recognized. Anyone else to check in?
KC2MDP, Steve and Yes.
No question at the moment, dude.
Okay, we got Steve, and he doubled with someone who said no question at the moment. Who else would like to check in?
WB7AVF, Rob, New York, no question.
W2BIE, good evening, Dick. No.
And 2GOT, good evening, Mel.
W-S-2-N, Paul, good evening, Dick, with the Space Report.
Good evening, all, this is K2-K-E-Y.
Okay, we've got Steve, ABF, D-I-E, W-S-2-N, G-O-T, and Mel, K-E-Y. Anyone else?
W-2-P-N-J, listening.
I bet you his name is Bob. Okay, Bob, just listening. Anyone else?
P2SIZ, Steve in Brooklyn, no questions.
And Steve in Brooklyn with a no.
KCKNB, just listening, Nick.
And that's some stranger named Rich. El Presidente. Better check in more often, Rich. Thank you. I think the first person who had a yes. Let me go back to my list here. I think we had a yes. Huh. Who was it? Who gave me the yes on having a real question or a comment?
MDP, Steve.
I thought so. I wrote it down. Oh, I see what it is. Can't read my own handwriting, Steve. You're number one on the runway, Steve. And we got lots of time. We're not busy so far tonight, so take your time and give us all the nuances of your question or comment. You got it, Steve.
Okay, very good, Dick. I'd like to say good evening to you and to everyone else out on the net. Dick, I have a duplex cavity filter for 900 megahertz. Eventually, I want to set it up for a repeater. And is there a poor man's way of tuning this thing, or do I need some fancy equipment to tune this thing? Also on this thing, it looks like it has a T-connector. It's not a T-connector. It looks like a box. Would that be like another type filter? Back to you, Dick.
Okay, Steve, let's first discuss what a duplexing filter is. I'll tell you something about the specs that are required. That gives you some idea of how difficult it is to tune one. And we'll tell you about that T-connector. Most repeaters that use a duplexing filter are a single-site situation. In other words, one antenna is used simultaneously for transmitting and receiving. Electronically, it's easier to have a split site where you transmit out of one antenna, and I'll pick a number, a quarter of a mile away, you got a receiving antenna. And because we're a quarter mile in distance, with 90 dB of loss between the two, your power output from your transmitter doesn't overload the receiver. The good news about a receiver, a radio receiver, is it can be very, very sensitive. You give it a quarter of a microvolt, which is, let's see, minus 127 plus 107 plus 12, I guess we're talking about minus 120 dBm, an extremely weak signal, and make a good receiver respond properly. That's the good news. The transmitter may be putting out 50 watts. That on the dBm scale is something like plus 47 dBm. So you've got a receiver that can receive minus 120. You've got a transmitter that's putting out plus 47. The difference between the two is 170 some odd decibels. That's a tremendous amount of power ratio. If you expressed it as a hard number of power in versus power out of the transmitter versus power into the receiver to give a good response, it would be one with 17 or 18 zeros after it. Huge ratio. And a receiver, a really good receiver, maybe has 80 or 90 dB of dynamic range, and you're giving it a signal that's 180 dB above threshold. So you're only 80 or 90 dB above its dynamic range when you transmit and receive out of the same antenna at the same time. So it's kind of obvious that what a duplexing filter does is to recognize that there's on a single site repeater, there's always a frequency difference between transmit and receive. This particular repeater sends out a signal at 146.85, listens to a signal on 146.25, 600 KC lower, which sounds like a small percentage, and it is. But if you do a real good job of building a filter, a pair of filters, you have one filter that's got a passband at 146.85, you got another filter that's got a passband at 146.25, and there's another requirement for those filters. The 146.25 filter, that's the one that passes the receiver signal from the antenna into your repeater receiver. It must not only pass 146.25, but you're trying to create the deepest You're trying to create the deepest possible notch on 146.85. When you align it real well, a real good four-cavity or six-cavity filter, three cavities on transmit and three cavities on receive, you can easily get 110 or 120 dB of notch. In other words, the transmit frequency comes out of the transmitter, goes through the transmitting filter, goes straight to the antenna, and is attenuated by about 1.5 dB. Start off with 50 watts, and you got 30-some odd watts to get to the antenna. The signal, the weak signal that the antenna is picking up, comes back through the second filter, the receiver filter, and into the receiver. The antenna has a T connector on it. The cable going to the antenna is a T connector, and one side of the T connector goes to the transmitting filter, one side goes to the receiving filter. Those pieces of cable to that T connector are carefully chosen to be just the right length. You also recognize the fact that a well-tuned high Q filter on 146.85 will pass that frequency, but it acts as essentially a short circuit on the other frequency, the receive frequency, and vice versa. So that duplexing filter has got quite a bit of technology in there. Very fancy filters, just the right length of cable between the filters and the T connector, and the common port of the T connector goes to the antenna. The length of the cable to the antenna is essentially not critical. The way you align one of these filters, if you had a whole lot of time, you could put signal generators through it, look at the signals on a spectrum analyzer. You can't do this on a power meter, because when you're trying to tune for a notch 120 dB down, a power meter is just not sensitive. A spectrum analyzer, a good spectrum analyzer, is sensitive to those weak signals that you're trying to notch out one and pass another at the same time. A swept signal generator or a tracking filter setup or a network analyzer is the right way to do it. But even then, rarely does a spectrum analyzer or a network analyzer have more than 90 or 100 dB of dynamic range on screen when everything is set just right and the signal levels are just the right amplitude and so on. Rarely do you have any more dynamic range than 90. And a real good duplexing filter, properly aligned, can give you a notch of 110 or 120 dB. So to get full performance out of it, you got to do something else. You got to do a couple of extra tricks of throwing in pads at the right time, adjusting signal levels, and so on. And, it's a bit of an art form to get full performance out of a duplexing filter. Now, if you want to align it yourself using signal generators and a spectrum analyzer, it's not going to explode. It's not going to catch on fire. Nothing really bad can happen as long as your transmitter is somewhat protected from a high standing wave ratio. But the worst thing you can do is the transmitting filter that the transmitter goes straight into. If that one doesn't present a...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
If that one doesn't present a good impedance, now then the transmitter could be giving a little bit of grief. But you can do the alignment yourself, but know that unless you're pretty well equipped and you've got a couple of extra tricks up your sleeve, you're not going to get full performance out of it. If you don't get full performance out of the duplexing filter, if some of the transmitter signal leaks into the receiver, and there's about three ways that it can get there. One, because the duplexing filter itself is not well aligned. Number two, because the transmitter and receiver are running on the same power supply, and signals by sneak pass are going from one point to another. Number three, if all the cables are not double-shielded coax, RG214 or RG9, you know, really well-done cable connectors and so on, so you've got lots of shielding, some of the signal out of the transmitter can leak into the receiver. And if any of those leakage paths occur, through the filter, through the air, through the power supplies or whatever, it is possible for enough signal, even though it's on the wrong frequency, the receiver in this case would be, tuned to 146.25, but if it starts seeing a whole lot of signal at 146.85 and becomes overloaded, you start getting into mod performance, desensitization, and so on. What some guys do to test whether or not everything is working correctly is to first turn off the transmitter and with the right kind of instrumentation, measure at the antenna port what is the receiver sensitivity in microvolts or dBm. Then you turn the transmitter on. Hopefully your instrumentation can tolerate transmitter power output. A good service monitor can do that, at least briefly. And if all goes well, the receiver keeps the exact same sensitivity when the transmitter is enabled. Well, until you got everything just set right, you'll find out when you turn on the transmitter, you used to have a receiver with a quarter of a microvolt of sensitivity, and now it's got 2 microvolts of sensitivity. And that's a whole lot of decibels of desensitization due to some sneak path of signal causing usually front-end overload. So a single-site repeater does require quite a bit of sophistication. A good example, for instance, is it's extremely tempting to get one of these brick amplifiers, a Mirage Baker 1016, for instance, 10 watts in, 160 watts out, and use that as the final stage of your transmitter to boost the power output. Well, that particular piece of equipment, nicely made, the 12-volt lead coming out of there is not very well shielded, and probably a watt of power is coming out of the 12-volt lead when that brick amplifier is working. And the world is filled up with guys who temporarily try to use one of those inexpensive brick amplifiers on their repeater to boost power output. And they soon realize that, yeah, the transmitter was stronger, but now the receiver became dead due to desensitization because of leakage signals coming out of that particular amplifier. If you're willing to build a real sturdy box around that amplifier with fancy feed-through filters, you can restore it to a well-shielded operation that maybe you can use it on a repeater. But now you're left with the problem of how do you heat sink this thing that you put a great big box around. So you can see where you can start chasing your own tail. This is not the whole story, but it's a thumbnail scratch of a little bit of the story, Steve. So go ahead and tune your filter. Have some fun with it. But there are professional services that can do it. There are guys like Andy who probably are equipped to do it, to be A2CDL. So, KC2, MDP. I wonder if that's some of the info you were looking for, Steve. K2RIW for TechNet.
Yes, very good, Dick. I appreciate all the info. Gave you a lot to think about. And I guess as you were explaining this, the sophistication of tuning this thing, I was thinking of Andy in the back of my head. I'll have to give him a call and see if he can help me out. Once again, Dick, I appreciate all the info, and back to you.
Anybody have any further questions or comments on the subject of the duplexing filter at 900 megs that Steve was discussing? Give me a call, let us right now.
Okay, you too, Jay.
Go ahead, Eric. Mr. Trellis himself, you got it, Eric.
Yeah, first a couple of operating notes, Dick.
Well, actually, we have some stations in Massachusetts that are part of this now, and one of the things I guess we're going to have to get used to is asking for check-ins that are not local. That's one thing. The other thing is you'll notice that there's another beep, and you're restricted to 3 minutes and change, so that's just going to be live from now on, unfortunately. And most of today's duplexes are what we call bandpass band reject, where there are multiple cavities, where one cavity on the receiver side will be interested in making a notch exactly on the transmitter frequency. Back to you, K2RI, WKE2.
Okay, now in the old days, Eric, they were on a really good one. You'd have 3 filters tuned to the transmit frequency, 3 filters tuned to the receive frequency. The intercoupling between the filters was usually capacitive on the receiver side and inductive on the transmitter side, or vice versa, so that one set of filters tended to give a notch on the other frequency, and a total of 6 filters. Is that style still popular, or are they now using a smaller number of filters with one of those cavities dedicated to just creating that notch, which is what I think you just said? Give me a few more words on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW, and the technical man.
Yeah, and the other thing is to wait for the beep, guys. Actually, you see both out there, but you got to remember when you're going to see, it's not like we just bought something new. When I look in a catalog, I generally see 6 filters, you know, 3 and 3, and usually one is associated with a match.
Very fine. I think you're saying we're simultaneously going to a New England repeater. Do you happen to know if that New England repeater is in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Vermont? Do you know which one it is, Eric Lance?
Yeah, it's node 4259. And actually, I believe this is a simplex node, so this is Richard. He's one of the reflector owners, principals, and I'm sure he's joining in. He's aware of it. Also, as a matter of factly, our president is using his own node, too. So, and you're also coming out of my repeater in Plainview. So, you know, as time goes on and as we learn, as more people join in, it'll become more interesting. K2RIWKE2EJ.
Very fine, Eric. One last question. I'd like to drop into your soul mine and see you one of these days this coming week. You possibly have some paperwork I'm interested in. What day do you think would be one of the better days?
Actually, tomorrow is fine. I have it in the car. And actually, it's in a form where I could actually make you a second copy of it, so you can have two.
I do have a... If you think it is not proprietary information, I have a buddy who would love to see an electronic form because he has the ability to make a bound copy, so to speak. Is there a possibility of an electronic form, CD-ROM or whatever, that's available? And maybe the answer is no. I'll go back to you.
Well, you would think the guys that invented this technology called digital television would have that. But no. Actually, I've asked that question. And, you know, he's been just Mr. Copy Machine. It's incredible.
Well, just to give you guys a little bit of a hint of what Eric and I are talking about, I'm involved in a project that's trying to make some improvement on high-definition television. Eric, being the engineering manager of 2 of the major New York City television broadcast stations that has digital television, is heavily involved in the project. He's got a document which gives an awful lot of information that I could use. As you guys may or may not know, February 17, 2009, is the final deadline in which, in theory, essentially all analog television over-the-air broadcast will cease to exist. And if you don't have a television that is, if you're receiving television reception over-the-air, not through cable or not through satellite, if you're an over-the-air television reception type person, I'm one of those, and so is Mel, K2KUI, we're the last two guys in our town that both have an antenna on the roof. If I don't have a set-top converter box, or if I don't have a digitally equipped television, I'm going to have nothing to watch. So, something to prepare for. I believe there's a voucher being made available to people. One or two of these vouchers worth $50 allows you to buy a converter box. The good news is you're getting a $50 voucher to correct the situation if you're not willing to go out and spend $1,000 or so for a real television. The bad news is some of the better converter boxes that you can put on top of the set, I think, start off at around $75. So it's going to still take a little bit of your own money. I may have some of those details a little bit mixed up. Eric, you're in the broadcast industry, so straighten me out.
K2EJ.
K2RIW in the technical net.
KB2MAR.
MAR recognized, but Eric first. Go ahead, Eric.
Actually, everything you said is just about correct. The government is giving out $40 vouchers, which means you're going to spend a little bit. But the interesting thing is I've seen some of the new converter boxes, and they're now fifth-generation equalizers, and they work. They actually work, and most people don't realize that when you put one of these boxes on your TV, even if you're going to feed it with RF, you're not going to feed it with video, it'll be a vast improvement over what you're used to seeing. Because that's what digital television goes. Either the picture is perfect, or you ain't got no picture. It's a amazing visual improvement, and you really ought to stop calling it high-definition television. It's digital television. It's just high-definition. It's just one of many, say, six actual flavors of television that can come through that box. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, before we pass it over to Gabe, let me ask you one or two other questions. Fifth generation digital television converter box.
Wow.
Now, I'm hearing rumors to the effect that the latest and greatest digital converter boxes can tolerate a significant number of multicast signals. And let me explain what that means to you guys listening. That is, your television broadcast transmitter has got a zillion dB gain antenna on a nice high hill somewhere, on a nice high tower, transmitting, in some cases, 5 megawatts of effective isotropic radiated power on UHF television. I think you're allowed to go as high as 7, but let's assume that your local UHF TV station is putting out 3 or 5 million watts of effective radiated power out of its antenna. And the path between that and your particular receiving antenna, which might be on the roof of your house, you'd say, gee, it's a beautiful looking path. And you'd like to believe the signal's going to go straight there. Well, Mother Nature is a little bit more persnickety than that. Every possible other reflecting object, that means the water tower, the buildings, the trees, the ground, the hill that's nearby, all of that jazz is also sending you a delayed signal, a bounce signal. All of that's called multipath. So you've got all of these paths with various delays coming into the antenna simultaneously, and here's your poor digital demodulator box trying to figure out what's going on with all of that potential inter-symbol distortion. All those delayed signals laying on top of each other, shifted in the dime domain, represents a very complicated signal. Let me drop a second.
The 747 on final approach to JFK is a perfect multipath source.
And that was good old Ed, and I thank you for that one. So if you live near a major metropolitan airport and you watch all those fluttery signals reflecting off of all of those airplanes that are a beautiful mirror in the sky reflecting a signal to you, that poor converter box is getting a very complicated signal. In the old days of analog television, those delayed signals represent a ghost picture, a little bit dimmer, shifted to the right because they're delayed in time on your display of your TV screen. With digital television, you don't get that. The set either gets a proper demodulated signal that has the right bit error rate or the right cyclic redundancy code to it and accepts it and it gives you a picture, or the picture either freezes or it gives you nothing. So the modern day converter boxes have an equalizer built in. Simplistically, you could think of it as a delay line with a bunch of taps, and the smarts inside of the converter box is capable of taking all of those taps, shifting, deciding which taps it's going to use, deciding what magnitude of the signal coming out of each one of those taps, representing the right amount of delay and the right amount of magnitude to try to compensate, to try to debux is one way of putting it, but you've got a multipath signal, and it's trying to take all of those individual signals and combine them correctly in the time domain. A real magic trick when it does it just right. In the old days, I think the converter boxes could tolerate 0 to 25 milliseconds of delay of something like 3 multipath signals. and I'm hearing tell that the modern ones can tolerate plus and minus 50 milliseconds of delay or advance, because occasionally the multipath delayed signal is the strong one and the direct signal is not the strong one. You may live alongside of a great big building and the signal reflected off the building is the strongest thing you get and the direct signal is weaker. So the modern day boxes have really got to perform some magic. And I bet you were you're keeping track of those, and I think you said they're up to fifth generation, Eric. Give us a couple more words on that. Fantastic. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the technical net.
K2RIW, K2J. Oh, you basically have it right. Actually, the range of the new equalizers go from minus, we call it minus because it's like using an imaginary number, minus 75 to plus 300. And the darn things work with avenues, and you can wiggle them around. They stay locked. There's a couple of other technologies that are actually happening. First of all, is what they call synchronous transmitters. One of the things that you said before was absolutely true of analog television, but it's not true of digital television. To give you an example of the station on Long Island, we run about almost 60 kilowatts in analog. That goes into a 17 dB gain antenna. That equals still a little more than a megawatt. Now, when we go to digital, I have two choices. I can either use that high gain antenna, or I can use my side mounted one that has something that was 13 dB gain or 11 dB gain, I forget. Anyway, the TPO for that antenna is 4 kilowatts. And if I use the top one, the TPO will be a little less than a kilowatt. And the actual digital ERP, which gives me the same coverage as the grade B,